It isn't often that I'm invited to interview a world-class historian and philosopher, and I was somewhat intimidated as I approached the Rome Hotel, where Professor Quentin Skinner had agreed to talk to journalists before receiving a prestigious award. The prize in question is the 2006 Balzan Prize, which is given to individuals who have earned international distinction in their field, regardless of their nationality, race or creed. Past prize winners include the likes of Mother Teresa of Calcutta and composer Gheorghe Ligeti. Professor Skinner had been singled out in the humanities field of political thought for, quote, his formulation of a distinctive methodology for the study of the history of ideas, his major contribution to the history of political thought, and his acute reflections on the nature of liberty, unquote. Needless to say, this is not exactly my field of expertise, and I was a little worried about how to conduct the interview. I shouldn't have worried. Professor Skinner was kind and gentle, and did his best to put me at ease.
Mi chiamo Quentin Skinner.
Are you doing it in Italian?
No, I'm doing it in English. And I hold a position which is called the Regius Professorship of Modern History at the University of Cambridge, England. And this is a professorship which is in the gift of the Crown, which is perhaps strange because I'm a Republican, but it's awarded really effectively as a senior professorship in Cambridge.
Well, not really knowing how to go about it, I suggested we start from the very beginning and asked him to tell me what his work consists in.
My work is partly historical in that I've written about the history of moral and political thinking, and it's partly that I'm interested in contemporary politics, and I'm most interested in the relationship between those two, how far knowing about the history of our cultures and their politics and their thinking about politics might help us to think about our own political predicament here and now. So that has meant that I've been most of all interested in questions about the freedom of citizens, questions about the liberty of citizens within modern democratic states, and how our thinking about that idea developed and how we should think about it now.
And that brings us right to the heart of the matter, Professor Skinner's considerations and reflections on the nature of liberty. In today's world, he explained, we are much less free than we like to think.
I'm interested in a lost tradition of thinking about freedom, which stems originally from the Roman law and which is important in the republicanism of Renaissance Italy and then was important in the modern attempts to form republics in England unsuccessfully and in France and in America successfully during the Enlightenment period. And this was a view of freedom in which it was emphasized that we are unfree if we are subject to the will of other people. So the big distinction was between libertà and servitù, as the Italian writers always put it, not, as we would now think was the most important distinction, between having rights and not having those rights interfered with. What the tradition I'm interested in wants to say is that you could have all your rights, as a matter of fact, but if you owe them to the fact that somebody else has granted them to you and could take them away, then you don't hold them as rights. You hold them by grace of that person. And that is the condition of servitù. That's the idea of freedom that I'm really interested in, that it's a theory which remains very interested in the idea of individual human rights and whether we have possession of those rights. But what it asks us is, in what way do you hold those rights? Do you hold them securely from the power of people to take them from you? Or do you hold them subject to somebody else's will? And in modern democratic states, as we like to call them, although we elect legislatives, they then create executives which have a great deal of discretionary and arbitrary power over us, which we have not granted to them, which we have not consented to, but which is potentially a threat to our civil rights. And that's what worries me, the extent of this arbitrary power that there is within modern democratic societies.
Can you make an example that we can relate to easily?
Yes. In my own country, the prerogative powers, as they used to be called, used to be lodged with the Crown. And these were a variety of powers which may look quite inoffensive. They included the right, for example, to declare war and peace. But in modern Britain, these rights are held by the executive, not by the Crown, and that's to say, effectively, by the Prime Minister. Now, the people of Great Britain have not voted through electing their legislative assembly that there should be these reserve executive powers, but it did mean, for example, that our current Prime Minister was able to take Great Britain to war without having to ask Parliament. Because the right of war and peace is a royal prerogative which is exercised by the executive. He did in the end agree that it should be debated in Parliament, but he didn't have to, and nor were the representatives of the people ever asked to vote on the question. So that's the sort of issue that worries me, is the extent to which there are powers over us within our societies which we haven't given our consent to be exercised over us.
But whatever seed of doubt he may be sowing, Professor Skinner adamantly proclaims his belief in democracy.
I'm a passionate democrat. I believe in the sovereignty of the people. And I believe, of course, that that sovereignty will have to be exercised by representation, because I can't see, and nobody can see, how else to exercise the sovereignty of the people except through representation in big modern democracies. My worry is that a lot of power is being exercised other than through the represented will of the people, and that is undemocratic. So I speak for democracy against what I see as undemocratic elements in our governments.
I asked him if he considers any one of the current democracies in the world today a model.
Well, I think there's what's come to be called a democratic deficit in all the large-scale democracies, and in Europe we suffer from it quite obviously. It's bound to happen in very large-scale communities in which representation has to be the way that the will of the people is exercised and expressed. But I suppose what I'm pleading for is strong representative assemblies that are able to do more to control their executives. It seems to me that we all operate this system, but that it's from the point of view of a democrat who's interested in the idea that the people are ultimately the sovereigns, the balance has gone slightly the wrong way. It's tilted too much towards executives, or in the case of America, towards judiciaries, and away from legislatives. And I believe in what John Locke calls the dignity of legislation, that the people should legislate through their representatives, and that should be how we run democracies. After all, that's what we are meant to believe. It's just not what we actually do.
What is lacking?
Well, what is lacking is the means to control the reserves of executive power and the means to give better expression to the representative will of the people, if we want to be democrats. Of course, we might not want to be democrats, but we are living in what we think of as democracies, and our values require that we act insofar as we can democratically. And I'm saying, if those are our values, then we do need to reconsider the institutions of our politics to some degree.
Now, one thing I forgot to mention at the beginning is that each Balzan prize is worth 1 million Swiss francs, and the winners are each required to allocate half of their prize money to funding research projects carried out by young scholars or scientists in their respective fields. What is your proposal for the prize money? I asked Professor Skinner.
It arises from the fact that I'm increasingly worried about the dominance in academic life of the English language. And, you know, here we are sitting in Rome, but we're speaking in inglese, la langue commerciale. I have proposed to the university press of my university, the Cambridge University Press, that they should set up a fund, which would be the Balzan money, which would be for the translation into English of academic work by young researchers who are working in preferably more minor European languages where it's difficult for them to gain a large audience for their work. It's not difficult if you write in Italian because everyone reads Italian, or in German because that's a language spoken by 100 million people, or in French because most of us read French. But it is very difficult for outstanding young researchers, for example, in Eastern Europe or also in Russia, to have their work read in English. And we have to face the fact that because English is spoken across the globe, and, you know, in Australia as well as in America, it is a very large academic audience in English. So I would like this money to be used to help younger researchers in languages that are not widely used to have themselves published in the language which is most widely used.
Just one last thing about your passion. You're obviously very passionate about what you do. What drives you?
I've no idea. I would like to understand that better. I don't want to sound pious about the reasons. Obviously, I feel very patriotic about my country and troubled about some of the directions that it has taken. And I like to think that that's part of my motivation. I certainly think that academics, even if they're doing the kind of research in the humanities that I do, ought to try to be some use in their societies as teachers and as people talking about the direction that the societies are taking.